Good afternoon, everyone. So today I'm going to talk about Fate and Destiny, a framework for cloud recovery testing. And this is a joint work with Palafi Josi, Peter Alfaro, Joe Hellerson, and Kusik Shen from Berkeley, Tando, Andrea, and MCR Pachiduso from Wisconsin, and Ruba Bortakur from Facebook. All right, so let's get started. So we've entered what's so called the cloud era. And basically in the cloud, we have thousands of community machines. So at this scale, we know that rare hardware failures now become frequent, right? And if rare hardware failures become frequent, it means that failure recovery has to come from the software and it must be a first-class operation, right? So definitely failure recovery impacts cloud's availability, reliability, and performance. But the problem is that often the time, failure recovery is hard to get right, right? So that's why we often see these reliability-related headlines. For example, Facebook lost millions of pictures because of these failures. T-Mobile and Microsoft lose psychic customer data when the cloud fails. Web startups crumble under Amazon storage service outages. And there are many other examples that we could find in the literature. Okay? So to me, the weather forecast tomorrow is actually cloudy, which is actually good, but perhaps, you know, with a chance of failure, right? So, and what we want to do is we want to improve this situation. All right, so I've told you that failure recovery is hard to get right, but why? Well, according to some large-scale developers, is that one of the problems is that testing is not advanced enough for cloud systems in the sense that cloud systems face complex, multiple, diverse failures. They see these failures, machine failures, network failures, and their combinations, and there's a lack of testing tool that exercises complex failure modes in existing cloud systems. So that's the first problem. The second problem is that recovery is often underspecified. Well, you could argue that there are lots of well-grounded recovery protocols that we could find in literature, but in reality, there are lots of custom recovery, and the implementation is usually much more complex than the design specifications. So I believe we need two advancements. First, we need to exercise these complex failure modes, and we need to help developers write some form of recovery specifications and test the implementation directly against the specifications, okay? So that's where Fate and Destiny come in. Fate is a failure testing service, and Destiny is the declarative testing specification. So as you can see, I cannot find the letter Y in the word specification, so I need to force this a little bit. So how Fate and Destiny work, basically we run cloud software on multiple machines or could be on multiple processes in a single laptop because we could emulate the network and the failures. And what Fate will do is that Fate will make failure decisions. For example, it could inject right partitioning, machine failures, and their combinations. Now, as these failures initiate recovery, then Destiny will interpose the systems and check if there's any specifications that are violated or not. Okay? So that's at a high level how Fate and Destiny work. In terms of our specific contributions, again, Fate is able to exercise multiple diverse failures. We've exercised more than 40,000 unique combinations of multiple failures, right? So this is the challenge of cloud testing. We need to deal with this combinatorial explosion of multiple failures. So that's why Fate is equipped with some pruning strategies so that we can explore these multiple failures quickly, and I'll explain that later. But this gives us an order of magnitude speed up, and we still found the same number of bugs in these pruned versions, okay? And Destiny, again, is all about facilitating risk recovery specifications that relates to reliability and availability. Our specifications are clear and concise. We use data log. And on average, we just need to write, for example, 5 lines per check. And in the paper, I also talk more about design patterns in writing recovery specifications in Destiny. Okay. In terms of summary, result summary, basically we target 3 cloud systems so far. HDFS has been our primary target, but we also integrate Fate and Destiny to Cassandra and Zookeeper. And we, in the paper, we report that we found 16 new recovery bugs in HDFS. But most recently, we also tested one of the newest versions, and we found 6 more new bugs, okay? So that's the importance of failure testing. And we found lots of problems, like data loss, for example, buggy recovery that just wipes out all replicas, unavailability, like broken rack awareness policy, cannot restart after failures, and many other examples, okay? All right, So here's so that's the introduction, and this is the outline. I'm going to talk about Fate first and Destiny, and then I'll evaluate Fate and Destiny together and then conclude. So for Fate, I'm going to begin with failure IDs, which is our abstractions in exploring failures, and then I'm going to talk later how we can do this quickly. Okay. All right, so before talking about Fate, let me give a quick illustration of the Hadoop File Systems Write protocol. So if you want to put a file to HDFS, so here we have the master node, client, and 3 data nodes. So in the beginning, the client will send an allocation request to the master saying that I want to put a file, and the master, let's say, gives three nodes. So the client will create a pipeline to begin the setup states and then continue on the data transfer states. Okay, very simple. So what will happen if we have a failure during the setup states? What will happen? The client will go back to the master node saying that, hey, the old pipeline was broken. Please give me a new set of nodes. Let's say the master gives node 1, 2, 4. It will begin a new pipeline, begin the setup states, and continue on the data transfer states. Now, if a failure happens during the data transfer states, what will happen is different. The client library will only continue on the surviving nodes, okay? And this is because the client only has a sliding window cache, so it cannot really restart from the beginning because we are transferring a big amount of data. So you can see that they are different, okay? So what's my takeaway points from this example? So you can see from these illustrations that failures can happen anytime in this protocol, right? Failures happening at different stages will result in different recovery behaviors. Failures could happen anywhere. Could happen in middle node, last node, and so on. And this is a more complex illustration of the protocol, but still a much simpler illustration than what the code looks like. You can see that within this protocol, we could have any types of failures. This could fail, crashes, nodes could be partitioned, racks could be partitioned. Okay? And that's what FIT will do. FIT will exercise all these diverse failures and their combinations. And definitely, in order to do that, we need to have some form of abstractions in exploring these failures. And that's why I'm going to talk about failure IDs first. Okay? So failure IDs is, again, an abstraction of IO failures. And I'm going to show you here an example how we build a failure ID. So basically, we're going to intercept every IO. And for every IO, we're going to build detailed information about what that IO is all about. More details can be found in the paper. But the idea is that for every IO, we could inject all possible failures that could happen around this IO. Right? For example, we could insert crashes, a network partitioning, again, at node level or rack level, these failures, and so on. Okay? Now, so the thing here is that for a given IO information, for an injected failure, and in this example, basically, the failure that we select is a crash, then we're going to give a unique failure ID. Okay? So that's how we explore different failures on different IOs. Okay? So as a note, in the next couple of slides, I'm going to use alphabetical symbols to represent failure IDs. Okay, so let me quickly illustrate how FIT runs. Basically, you could specify to FIT that you want to inject one failure per run. So FIT will run experiment number one. We'll write the right protocol. It's this failure IDA. We will inject failure IDA. We'll run another experiment. We've done A, so we'll skip A and we'll do B. Skip A, B, do C, and so on until there's no single failure to run. You could also specify two failures per run. So we'll run AB in one experiment, we'll run AC on another experiment, BC on another experiment, until there is no combinations of two failures to inject. Okay? So this is the brute force exploration. Okay, so that's at a high level how we explore these failure IDs. Now I'm going to talk about how we could explore these failures quickly. Okay? All right, so initially we've exercised, again, more than 40,000 unique combinations of 1, 2, and 3 failures per run, which took us more than 80 hours of testing time, right? So we want to do better. Now, if you wonder why the number is big, let's just imagine this simple example where we have, let's say, two possible failure IDs that we could inject on every node, and there are three nodes participating in this protocol, okay? Now, you specify to FIT that you want to inject two failures per run. So what FIT will do in brute force, it will inject A1 and A2 in one experiment, A1, B2, B1, A2, B1, B2, and so on. Okay? There are too many combinations to explore, and here we're just talking about 6 failure IDs. In reality, there are many more than this. So again, to me, this is the challenge of cloud testing. On one side, you want to exercise these complex multiple failures, but on the other hand, we need to deal with this combinatorial explosion of multiple failures. Okay? All right, so that's why we're going to prune this combination of multiple failures. So there are two properties of multiple failures that we're going to prune, pairwise dependent and independent failure IDs. And I want to quickly mention that the goal of this pruning strategy is to exercise distinct recovery behaviors first. And it's possible because some failures result in similar recovery, and as a result, we improve testing time by more than 10 times and still found the same number of bugs. Okay. All right, so let's prune dependent failure IDs first. So what we're going to build here is we're going to build a failure dependency graph. Okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to inject single failure first. And there's not that many combinations of single failures, so this is bearable. So for example, here we have like 4 failure IDs that we run in 4 different experiments. And in every experiment, we're going to record the subsequent dependent failure IDs. More details can be found in the paper. But you could imagine we have X depends on A, and what that means is that we will not be able to inject failure ID X unless we already injected failure ID A in the past, right? So X depends on A. So we can build this failure dependency graph, and if you specify to fate that you want to exercise two failures per run, then fate will exercise all these white edges. It will run 6 experiments with all these two failure combinations, okay? So we're going to prune this. So what we do is we have a method that we call as recovery clusterings. So basically, as you can see in this example, there are two recovery clusters, X and XY. So what that means is that we could only exercise distinct recovery clusters by just picking one failure ID that trigger its recovery clusters, okay? So in essence, at a high level, basically what we've done is that we've reduced all these white edges to just the green edges. So we just run 3 experiments, AX, CX, and CY, for example. Okay? So all right, so that's how we prune dependent failures. Now let's prune the independent failures. So you've seen this figure before. So basically, this is the same piece of code that runs in parallel on multiple nodes. So the failure IDs are independent. So how many combinations are there? In this example, there are FP squared times N times N minus 1, where FP represents number of failure IDs that we could inject per node, and N represents number of nodes participating in this protocol. Okay? So what we do first is we leverage the idea of symmetric code, that this is the same piece of code running in parallel on multiple nodes, common property in distributed systems. So perhaps, you know, it is sufficient enough that if we inject failures on a pair of nodes, such that we don't need to inject failures on other pairs of nodes, okay? So essentially what we've done is that we've reduced this N times N minus 1 to just 2. We've reduced this yellow edges to just the green edges, okay? But the problem here is that we still hit the FP square bottleneck, okay? On the last slide, we have 2. Here we have 4. In reality, we could have as high as 15. So we're going to borrow the recovery clustering method again. Basically, we're going to cluster A and B together. If injecting failure ID A, result in the same recovery behavior as injecting failure IDB. Okay? So at a high level, basically what we've done, you could imagine that we've reduced all these yellow edges to just the green edges. Okay? And more details can be found in the paper. Okay, so that's basically what fate is all about. Again, fate exercises multiple diverse failures via failure IDs. It's equipped with these smart pruning strategies that improve testing time. Definitely, there are some limitations of fate currently. We don't do I/O reordering because other related work already did this, so something that we could merge. We also haven't include states to failure IDs, something that we could do more, which will be interesting because it will explode the number of experiments. And some developers suggest to include more failure modes like transient, slowdown, and also data center partitioning, something that we're going to explore in the short future. Okay. All right, so that's fate. So let's move on to Destiny. So Destiny basically addresses the second half of the challenge of this testing in the sense that fate just injects all these failures, but we still need to know whether the system is correct or not under failures, right? So that's why fate needs Destiny. And so we need to write some form of specifications. But we are also motivated by these discussions by the developer. You know, they say that it's great to document in a spec the HDFS write protocol, but you know, we shouldn't spend too much time on it because a formal spec may be overkill for a protocol we plan to deprecate imminently. Right? So how should we write specifications? Perhaps it should be developer-friendly. It should be clear, concise, easy to understand, and easy to read. So what we did is that we experimented with datalog. Again, it's a declarative relational logic language, and it turns out that it's quite easy and fun to express recovery specifications in datalog because it's easy to express this logical relationship. And I want to emphasize that we just use datalog for writing specifications. We do not use datalog to implement the systems, okay? So kind of different than other related work that you might have seen before. So that's the beauty of Destiny. All right, so in the next couple of slides, I'm going to show you how we can write recovery specification in Destiny. Well, in essence, what you want to do is you want to express some form of violation by building up some form of expectations, capturing the actual behavior, and compare the two, right? If they're different, then you get violations. But Destiny is more than just specifications, because remember that earlier I mentioned that it is recovery that is underspecified, So we also want to support recovery specifications. And to do that, there are two more important elements, which is precise failure events and precise check timings. And we'll see how these elements play out in the specifications later. Okay. And finally, I keep mentioning that we directly test the implementation against this specification. So how do we do that? Well, we run the implementation as it is. So we run the write protocol. As the implementation runs, what we're doing is that we're going to just interpose on the I/O call. So we do not interpose any internal memory state of the system at all. Right? And what we, as you can see later, is that we can deduce all the expectation and facts only by just looking at the I/O events. And that's actually the beauty of using Datalog, is that you can easily deduce stuff from other stuff. Okay? All right, so this is a very simple specification template. Right? You want to throw a violation if an expectation is different from the actual behavior. And turns out that this specification fits nicely into a data log rule that looks like this, where we have a violation table that represents violation, expectation table represents your expectation, and some actual tables that represents your actual the actual behavior. If the expectation table does not look like the same as the actual table, then we're going to have some entries in the violation table. So that's how we know that there are some violations. Okay. So a little bit on data log syntax here. Basically, we have the head and colon dash, which represents derivations, and a bunch of predicates. So if the predicates are true, then the head will be true. So comma represents and, or basically a table join, right? All right. So let's try to specify this data transfer recovery. So you've seen this figure before. So essentially, if you have a crash during the data transfer states, then the client should continue on the surviving node. So your valid block replica should exist in the surviving nodes. So to express this, we're going to write this high-level rule where we have the incorrect nodes table, expected nodes, and actual nodes table. And let's say if we have this particular scenario like this, then this is what your expectation look like, right? That you should expect that your block B to reside in node 1 and node 2. If there is no recovery bug at all, the actual nodes table will look the same, that your block B will be in node 1 and node 2, and since they're the same, there will be no entry in the violation table, so you know that the system is good. There's no recovery bug at all. Okay. Now, we did find a bug that where if fate crashes node 3 at a particular point in time during this protocol, somehow in the next pipeline, the client only includes node 1. Okay. So this is a recovery bug. And again, you might wonder why this is a simple specification, but why there is such a recovery bug. Again, the implementation is always much more complex than specification. So you want to always test the implementation with some form of specifications, OK? OK, so if we have this recovery bug, your expectation table should look the same, because this is your expectation of correct behavior. But your actual nodes table will look different, OK? And since they are different, then there'll be some entry in the violation table. So that's how you know that there's some violation. Okay? All right, so that's at a high level how this high-level rule kind of work. So we've written one rule so far. And what we're going to do is we're going to build this expectation from scratch. Okay? So the question is, which node should have the blocks? And again, we could answer these questions by deducing our expectation by looking at the I/O events. The first I/O event that we look at is this get block pipe interface coming from the client to the master, where a client asks for three nodes for block B. And let's say the master gives the client node 1, 2, 3. So this is what your expectation should look like in the beginning. If you're not talking any failure, your expectation should look like this, that your block B should reside in node 1, node 2, node 3. Okay? So how do we fill this table? We just write one rule. Okay? And the rule, essentially, what the rule says is that we interpose the get block pipe interface. So for every node N and for a given block B that we see from this interface, we're going to just simply add B and N to this expectation table. Okay? Very simple. All right, so we've written two rules so far. But again, the problem is that we live in the world of failures, right? So if we have some failures, we need to update our expectation. Okay? So in this case, basically, we want to delete the node 3. So how do you do that? Very simple. We just write another rule. The rule says that please delete the node N if fate crashes the node, okay? Delete the N from my expectation if fate crashes the node, okay? So I want to pause a moment here. Now you can see that in order to support some form of recovery specifications, we need to have failure events that are coming from fate. So that's why destiny needs fate, okay? All right, so we've written three rules so far, and I want to kind of revise the last rule again because we need to be more precise because we are trying to specify the data transfer recovery. So it means that we need to know exactly when the failure should happen. And the failure should happen during the data transfer states. And basically what we do is that we kind of keep track the write states by just writing 5 additional rules, okay? And everything can be deduced by just looking at the I/O interface, which I mark in orange here. So that's it. That's how we build the expectations. Overall, we just write 8 simple rules, 8 lines of code, okay, to build the expectations. All right, so here's the kind of the high-level rule again. So we've built the expectations. Building the actual nodes tables is pretty much the same. We just interpose all the these I/O events. But I want to mention one more less important stuff is that when I specify recovery, it's not the same as like specifying invariance. Because if recovery is ongoing, definitely some invariants are violated because we have not reached to the good state yet. So we don't want to have false alarm in the middle. So basically what we want is we want to have some precise notion of precise check timings. We need to know exactly when to trigger a particular check. Right? And for this check, basically the precise check timing is upon block completion when a client sends an I/O to the master saying that I want to complete the block. Okay. All right, so summary of Destiny, again, we support recovery specifications that relates to reliability and availability, and the specs are clear and concise. We use data log. And there are more design patterns that we talk about in the paper, how we can add more detailed specifications, how we can write specs from different views, incorporate diverse failures, and many more. Okay. All right, so let's evaluate fate and destiny, and I'll conclude. So fate and destiny are implemented in 6,000 lines of code in Java. Again, we target 3 popular cloud systems, HDFS, Zookeeper, and Cassandra. And again, I mentioned this before, we found 22 new bugs in HDFS recovery. And 8 of the bugs could only be found if we inject multiple failures. Okay, so that's the importance of fate. And we also reproduced 51 old bugs just to show that we could exercise old failure scenario as well. So let me show you another one important availability bug that we found. So this in HDFS, basically, you have these specifications that kind of says, like, if multiple racks are available or reachable, definitely a block should be stored in a minimum of 2 racks. Because if a rack goes down, you should be able to access your block from other racks, right? So this is a good behavior. A client put a block, the replicas are kind of spread to 2 racks. But what fate could do is that fate could inject this rack partitioning. So if that's the case, then it's okay for the replicas to reside in rack 1. But at the end of the experiments, if fate removes the rack partitioning, it is the job of the replication monitor to move one of the replica to the second rack, right? But that's not what's happening. What's happening is, again, the replication monitor only checks that the number of replicas is 3, which is good, so it doesn't need to regenerate any lost replicas, but it forgets to check the locations of the replicas. So one of the replica is not moved to rack 2, okay? So how do we capture this specification? We just write this kind of high-level rule that you can find in the paper. But essentially, as you can see at the end of the protocol, we have some entry in the violation table. So that's why we know that there are some availability bugs. Okay. All right, so let's talk about the pruning efficiency. On the x-axis, I'm going to show you the protocols that we run in HDFS and how many crashes that we inject per run. And on the y-axis, I show the number of experiments that we need to do. Number of experiments represents number of combinations of the crashes that we need to do here. Red represents brute force, and green represents the prune version. Okay? So overall, you can see that we could reduce the number of experiments by an order of magnitude. And so far, we still found the same number of bugs in the prune version as in the brute force versions. So that's just by experience. Okay? We also try to compare Destiny in other kind of related work that test implementation against some form of specifications. Overall, we could write lots of checks, and on average, again, we need to, it's very simple, we just need to write a few lines per check. But again, I agree that simplicity is very something that is very hard to evaluate, okay? So the jury is still out there in what type of specification language that the developers will like, okay? All right, so let me conclude. So again, the cloud software systems must deal with these frequent hardware failures, so we need to improve, we need to advance the state of the art of cloud testing. And again, I introduced Fate and Destiny. What Fate does is, again, Fate explore multiple diverse failures systematically and quickly. Destiny facilitate concise recovery specifications. So if you're interested in writing specifications related to reliability, availability, something that you might want Destiny, you might want to check Destiny. And again, Fate and Destiny is a unified framework. Fate needs Destiny, and Destiny needs Fate, as you can see via the examples. And some companies are also exploring in adopting this technology. So if you're from industry and interested in adopting this, please come find me after the talk. All right? So that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm from Yale. So thanks for the good talk. And it seems to be a very useful tool, and you solve like a fundamental problem like handling a large number of exponential number of concurrent failures. So actually, we did something like in, to handle backup routing to survive under multiple failures too. So I know how hard it is, but you mentioned a lot of like news talking about failure cases observed in real world. How many of them are due to like concurrent multiple failures? Especially the failure cases can be specified in Destiny. Do you have any sense in mind?
So the question is, did I see like cases where it happens because of multiple failures? So from the news, it's hard to get the detailed information of what the failures look like in reality. But there are lots of papers credit to Google developers and other large-scale developers where they explain in the papers that they start to inject multiple but random failures, and they find more bugs in their systems, and they try to always fix these multiple failure bugs. So yeah, I mean, there are lots of bugs that you could find with multiple failures.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks.